terrible time about the delays, but fortunately now we do have a report before us. But I think first of all I have to welcome the honourable members as well as the staff from the officials from the department, as well as other guests. I think we do have communication and the PMG. I think we. The festive season dust has settled now, and I hope that we all entered the 2011 well with joy, happiness, and vigor as well as hope. Over the past year, much more has been done successfully, and much more is planned for the current year. Well, as much as we are all aware that we could meet some challenges in our way to pursue our goals, however, we need to face such challenges positively and turn them into opportunities and lessons. We need to consolidate our already extensive efforts, and more will be rolled out as we grow. We have been a great team. We have a program, and it's dependent on our continued participation and the committee's suggestions regarding the proposed activities is welcomed. I think with those few words, I wish to thank all the members and looking forward to a successful and progressive united team in the 2011. In our today's agenda, it's just a short agenda. We are going to receive a report from the delegation that undertook a study tour to Queensland in relation to the legislation, two pieces of legislation that the committee is busy with. Unfortunately, we have got less time because at 12 we have to move. The ruling party has got a caucus at 12, a special caucus. So I think the delegation will try to ensure that the report, but we're not going to rush ourselves to the detriment of the report. It is important that the committee receives a proper report. With those few words, I think we are going to receive a report. The researcher is going to lead us, and the team from the department is going to assist us, and then the members will make an input at some stage to expand more on the issues. But I think we have apologies. Secretary, can you read the apologies for us?
Good morning and compliments of the season. We had four apologies, one from Mama Hlakute, Mama Mnisi, Mama Njobe, and Mr. Sithole.
Thank you. Can you accept the apologies? Because I think we understand that uthanda uba task yasekezwa phaa on the ground and abantu ababagugi yethu ukuthi siqalise ukusebenza.
I don't know where the Honourable Bula put in apologies, but he was part of the team. And I'm wondering why he's not.
So let's not worry. We are here. We are here. Let's not worry about him. Can we accept the apologies that Honourable Gomez, Honourable, okay. May you please take over?
Thank you.
Portfolio Committee on Human Settlement Study Tour to Queensland, Australia, 27 November to 3 December 2010. Page 1 deals with the introduction. It sets out the background to the study tour, the delegation under the introduction. On page 2 provides a background to the study, that the committee study tour was necessitated by the need to learn from the Australian experience on how it deals with the legislation, referring to the two bills, the sectional titles and the Community Scheme Ombuds Service Bill. Page 2 also provides background information on the bill and why the committee decided to conduct a study tour to Queensland, Australia, that the South African legislation is based on the Australian model. It also outlines the issues that committee wanted to focus on in Queensland, the functions and the mandate of the Ombuds Service, that's on page 2, its corporate structure, the funding of the service, whether the service generates sufficient revenue to defray its own expenses, to learn from the dispute resolution process, conciliation, mediation and adjudication, as well as specialist adjudication of complex disputes, and also focus on information, service and training provided by the Commissioner's Office. On page 3, sets out the organizations visited. On day 1, the committee, the delegation was hosted by the Queensland Parliament. It sets out a summary of the discussion with the Queensland Parliament. In particular, it identifies some of the suggestions made by the delegation headed by the chair, the speaker from the Queensland Parliament, that South Africa should perhaps consider avoid creating large tracts of low-cost housing where there's no social integration, as well as a system where beneficiaries make no contribution. 3.2 identifies was a presentation made by the Queensland Department of Communities. That's where the housing or human settlement function is located. It provided an overview of the statistics of the Queensland profile of the Queensland human settlements. 34% of the property being paid off through a bond. 2% fully owned, and 31% is in the form of rental. On page 4, also a profile of the type of dwelling structures for Queensland, and 80% is for a separate house, and apartments constitute 11%, and semi-detached housing 8%. In particular, Queensland has experienced an increase in high-density housing over the last few years, which allows the developers to create bulk infrastructure. And increasingly, people are gravitating towards the inner city of Brisbane, which has lower associated transport costs. 3.2 provides an overview of the housing assistance programs provided by the State of Queensland, the social housing program, which provides subsidized rental housing for low-income households. And it's managed by both government and non-governmental organizations. The non-governmental organizations provide services such as rent collection and the maintenance of the buildings, housing for the indigenous population of Queensland, as well as private housing schemes to help people in the private rental market or the ownership market. And some of these schemes are the National Affordable Housing Agreement, where government has a partnerships with the public sector to invest in the rental dwellings to keep the, and the agreement with government is that that the investors keep the rental costs down for people in need. So government provides a subsidy. Then there's the first home owner grant provided to any person who purchase property for the first time, irrespective of eligibility. There's the Commonwealth Rent Assistance Scheme, which provides a rental grant for eligible persons. There's also a tax incentive to encourage investors or homeowners who have an additional property who earns investment on this property for rental purposes. And then there's also the homelessness program, which is operated by the NGO sector, who receive funds from the government. The committee also undertook undertook a visit to the office of Ms. Desley Scott, who's a member of the Queensland State Parliament, her constituency office. The committee was then introduced to some of the programs that are managed in this constituency area, such as, and particularly as it relates to human settlements, provides accommodation for the youth, senior persons, as well as houses for households or persons in need. And in this constituency office in particular, there is a program aimed at immigrants, because the area receives a number of immigrants, including from Africa. And programs would include social housing, providing furniture where furniture were needed, training to new tenants on how to use household appliances, as well as work opportunities. For example, a furniture removal business was initiated in the area for immigrants living in the community. The committee also undertook a visit to the Brisbane Housing Company. The Brisbane Housing Company is a non-profit organization that manages in partnership with the state and the city housing, rental housing for eligible persons. It sets rent at the level of the rental is set at 50% of the household's weekly income plus the Commonwealth Rental Assistance grant that households receive. Some of the social outcomes recorded on page 6, 3.4.2, is that 100% of the occupants are sourced from the public housing waiting list as administered by the Queensland Department of Communities. Low and very low income households are assisted. Only 2% of the residents pay for more than 30% of their income for the rental. Buildings are constructed close to public amenities, and the rental does not increase as salaries increase, as it would be the case with the social housing model. On day 2, the delegation visited the office for the Commission of Body Corporate and Community Management, one of the primary reasons for the visit to Australia. It looked at the function and the mandate of the office. It noted, for example, that the Commissioner's office is located in the Department of Justice and Attorney General. And it provided dispute resolution and information service. That during the 19 financial year, it dealt with a total of 27,000 inquiries related to the service, while 1,378 disputes were lodged. It also provides an overview. It has a resolvement rate of 98.5% of all applications lodged with the office. In terms of its staffing and its finance, the Commissioner's Office appoints adjudicators and conciliators. Adjudicators need a legal background. It's a bit specialist function, and it appoints adjudicators on part-time basis, whereas conciliators have a more general background, but they should be familiar with dispute alternative mediation processes. And conciliators, for example, are appointed on both part-time and full-time basis. It also looks at some of the other positions in the office of the commissioner, information service, case managers, etc. These are outlined copies of their job descriptions, aligned in appendix to G of the document. The Office of the Commission is fully funded by the Government of Australia, of Queensland. Because it acknowledges that there's a reluctance by the industry, the sectional title industry, to fund the service. That's on 3.8, on 3.5.4, Managing Board Body Corporates. The rules of body corporates are registered with the Register of Titles, or the South African equivalent of the Register of Deeds. It indicates that the body corporates have both administrative and a sinking fund. I think the sinking fund is what we would normally refer to as the maintenance fund, looking at long-term maintenance or considerable expenditure. And there are some requirements that the fund should be based on, considerations such as whether there's reasonable capital available, forecast 10 years, quotes for maintenance, and a budget should be formulated. For the most part, the Commissioner's Office receives disputes related to general meetings, and therefore the issue of proxies is important. That it also receives disputes related to bylaws or regulations from the body corporate. Managing agents and caretaking services contractors are considered non-voting members at annual general meetings of body corporates. That's on page 8. In terms of dispute resolution, there's internal self-resolution where persons are encouraged to resolve it amongst themselves. There's a conciliation process, which is a face-to-face process, and it can either be face-to-face or it can be through a teleconference. It is facilitated by a conciliator, and there can be agreements made between parties, although these agreements are not enforceable under the Act. But parties can, for example, request that if there's mutual agreement, that the adjudicator provide a consent order form, which they will complete and indicate what they agreed on. The next phase is the adjudication process. However, if parties, in the case of conciliation, fail to make an agreement, they can move to adjudication. If before parties come to adjudication, though, they must have attempted to resolve the dispute either through self-resolution or the conciliation process. Some issues are not considered appropriate for conciliation, which will go to its adjudication, such as emergency expenditure and a declaratory order. They have a prescribed form in which applicants must complete before when they apply for adjudication. The commissioner, when a party applies for adjudication, can either indicate a number of, on page 10, recommendations. The commissioner could indicate that it's suitable for adjudication, that it should go to the conciliation process, mediation, which isn't used as much, and specialist conciliation and mediation. On page 10 outlines the adjudication process, as I explained previously, and goes through the mediation, what is adjudication. On number 3.6 on page 11, provides an overview of the Queensland Residential Tenancy Authority as visited by the delegation. The Residential Tenancy Authority, first should be said that that a third of the accommodation in Queensland is in the rental market. The rest are self-owned. About 10% of these are social housing, while 90% considered private rental. And 80% of these rentals are managed by managing agencies. But managing agents are regulated by a code of conduct, which outlines issues such as best prices, disclosure, and how to conduct themselves during business. The Residential Tenancy Authority administers the Residential Tenancies and Rooming Accommodation Act. It's an independent and impartial government organization that assists tenants and landlords or leasers and agents to understand what are their rights and their responsibilities. It provides a number of services, including a client contact service, which provides information, a rental bond service. Now, a rental bond is, in South African terms, referred to as a deposit, rental deposit, that the tenant pays at the beginning of a tenancy to either the agent or the landlord. In Australia, the rental bond service was initiated in 2008. Due to conflict that would arise at the end of a tenancy when there's dispute about how much money is refundable to the tenant at the end of it when the person paid a deposit. The Australian legislation indicates that if a landlord accepts a bond or deposit for rental, it must be paid to the resident, to the rental authority within 10 days after receipt. This is compulsory. There's a process that's outlined. The landlord, the tenant has to complete an a form, a documentation. It has to be submitted to the rental tenancy authority. And the residential tenancy authority will then earn interest on this money. However, the interest is not transferable to the landlord or the tenant. The rental authority would keep the interest and use it for its own operations, but also then use it, plow it back into the rental sector in Australia. So that's money that comes to the state, and that's millions per annum, hundreds of millions per annum. There are very strict penalties if a landlord or a managing agent does not comply with the regulation, if they do not transfer the money within 10 days. The bond or the deposit is not compulsory, however, but if it is asked for, it must go to the authority. There's a system where if a tenant cannot afford to pay for the deposit, the person can apply to the Department of Communities for a loan to pay the deposit. The interest earned on deposits or bonds held, as it's known in Queensland, is the sole source of revenue for the agency, for the authority. They do not receive any revenue from the state. In terms of refunds, it happens very speedily if there isn't any dispute. If there's a dispute about it can be referred to the, it can either, it can be referred to the Queensland Residential, Queensland Civil Administrative Tribunal, which will also be discussed in the later in the paper. In the event of where there's no disputes, the monies are refunded either through the tenant and the landlord can make an application, or if there's no dispute, it can also happen through post offices. They use post offices. And the form is signed by both parties. The money can be paid off within 15 to 20 minutes after the application is lodged with the authority. It provides assistance, the authority also provides assistance to tenants and landlords in the event of disputes. And if it cannot be resolved, it goes to the Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal, also known as QCAT. And then page 13 outlines the processes followed within the authority, which could be telephone or shuttle negotiations, face-to-face meetings or three-way conferences. The service also has an investigative arm, which investigates and prosecutes offences under the legislation when it's appropriate, which will include when a landlord does not pay, transfer the money to the authority within 10 days. On page 3, page 14, the Brisbane Homelessness Service Centre, the delegation visited the centre on day 3. And page 14 outlines the situational analysis of homeless people, that despite the existence of a social housing policy in Queensland, in reality the demand for housing, available housing exceeds, the availability of housing exceeds the demand. The centre employs highly skilled people, they work in the community with homeless people, and since it's argued that homeless people have a number of social problems, it provides on page 14 its operations and scope. It provides information and support services, access crisis accommodation for people. It provides outreach programs to persons sleeping on the in public spaces and are vulnerable. It also provides primary health care services. And also looks at opportunities for employment and participation in sporting and recreation activities. On page 15, there's been a shift in the number of people who are accessing the service on the profile of the individuals who are accessing the service of the centre in Queensland over the last few years. For example, where in the past you would have single persons accessing services, you now have families accessing services at the centre. Also a number of older women increasing instead of young women and adolescents who are victims of domestic violence, unlike in the past. Also people in the past, the centre would assist people who are unemployed, increasing number of employed persons who are referred to as the working poor, working but unable to afford their own accommodation and sleeping in their vehicles. The visit of the centre indicated a number of policy implications for homelessness. That one of the key things that came out was that it is not enough to just provide accommodation for homeless people, but they also require support services because they often experience trauma and they experience isolation and loneliness once they settled into their own accommodation. So the key thing there was that government doesn't fund support services to these individuals, and this is very important. The other interesting fact that emerged was that there's strong focus on partnership with the police, for example, so that the police does not target the centre and also refer individuals that they are sleeping in public spaces, refer them to the centre. The Foresters Community Finance on page 15 is it's a non-profit organisation, which is the equivalent of emerged as from the Friendly Society Condition on page 16, which was the equivalent of Stockhouse in South Africa. It provides building financial, and it assists civil society organizations to build financial and social sustainability. It provides financial support it provides skills and knowledge, invest in the asset base through financial support. For NGO organizations. For example, the Foresters funded the Community Living Association for people with learning and intellectual disabilities, as well as two social enterprises for persons living, employed residents living in the association, caretaking service, as well as a landscaping business. It basically provides funding to civil society organizations that could not normally access funding through the mainstream institutions such as the banks. So they assist them in becoming sustainable, and they provide more than just financial support. They also provide some of the skills and expertise how to ensure that the business remains viable, or the organization financially and otherwise. It assists them also with raising capital and acquiring assets for the organization. On page 4, page 17, a visit to the Warnery Institute on day 4. At the Warnery Institute on page 17 is an independent non-profit organization that provides, that is dedicated to the well-being of the communities. Their business model is that it provides services to developers at normal rates, but then it would use the profits it made to invest back in the community. The money will go into a trust. And what it does, it will assist communities with what they call placemaking. It gets involved in the planning, the pre-planning, advanced planning stage. It looks at what are the needs of the people who will be living in the community to ensure the community is sustainable. And also there's integration in the community. So it looks at beyond what community needs. It uses the Maslow hierarchy of needs, which members are more familiar with, usually using psychology, to identify that communities are more than just providing shelter, which is at the base of the model of Maslow hierarchy of need. So security and comfort, shelter is usually at the base, and the Hornery model's approach is that community making is more than that. It should look at what social issues, the social integration, recreational activities, places for friends and family colleagues to gather together. It also looked at intellectual base of the pyramid, participation in group and societies, educational programs, the sensory and emotional aesthetic pleasures such as food, sounds, climate, weather, how the community set up, looking at the whether it creates social cohesion or encourages social cohesion. And also it recognizes that the apex of the pyramid that looks at the spiritual experience, issues such as places of worship, spiritual prayer, learning, that those are important in communities, creating integrated communities. And there's a number of lessons, case studies of how the Warnery Institute achieve its objectives. It would, for example, spend, it firmly, one of the important things to say, the Warnery Institute advocates that advanced planning is very important, and it would spend up to 5 years with a community and a developer before the actual implementation of a new housing or project or development. It believes that is one of the important lessons that can be learned. The other important lesson that emerged was that often governments would release the master plan of a development, to the developer, the new development. And the Warnery Institute argues that this is a mistake, because what happens is developers often don't have the same objectives in mind as governments, such as integration and sustainable communities. And if the government remains in control of the master plan of the new development, it controls the outcomes. The Warnery Institute, for example, spent up to 5 years before a project was implemented. A new project was to be implemented, and they recognized that once the project will be implemented, skills would be needed, which was not available in the local community, but would have to be imported. And instead, it said then, let's invest in the schools and ensure that the skills are provided as part of the school curriculum, so that by the time the project is implemented, the skills are available in the local community. So those are some of the long-term projects. It would also involve the youth in making of films of how they see their community. They're finding very innovative and creative ways to ensure that the community is sustainable and integrated. Then on page 20, some of the observations that the committee made during, it also went on a short walk through the one of the case studies, which is called the Calvin Grove Urban Village. What the committee observed was that they use mixed land use patterns, where residential buildings are constructed side by side with corporate buildings. In this way, the inner city does not become deserted at night. Units in residential buildings are constructed to minimize the ecological footprint. For example, each is equipped with a water tank to collect rainwater for household use. Then the Warnery Institute introduced the concept of dead spaces and living spaces, for example, utilizing lower levels of the Queensland University of Technology, which is all over the suburb, buildings all over the suburb, for shops and restaurants or human activity. In this way, corporate buildings are incorporated into the community for residential use and benefit instead of becoming a dead space or a dead area. For example, the ground floor might be used as a cafe, with outdoor tables and chairs. The Queensland University of Technology buildings are not all concentrated or clustered together in the suburb, but spread across the neighbourhood and therefore fully integrated within the community. The delegation also visited the Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal, which is a dispute resolution mechanism where if things cannot be resolved with the Commissioner's Office, it may be referred to the Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal, or QCAT. So it's both the Commissioner's Office and the Rental Authority would refer disputes that cannot be resolved to QCAT. So QCAT is headed by a Supreme Court judge, and as the President, and the Deputy President is also a judge. And it provides a number of services which are outlined on page 21, such as domestic building disputes, manufactured homes, as we know as caravans or trailer parks. It also deals with body corporate, as I indicated, if it cannot be resolved, it will go to QCAT, the commissioner. Tenancy disputes, I indicated that if the rental authority cannot resolve, it will go to QCAT. Neighborhood disputes, real estate, retirement villages, for example, will also fall under the jurisdiction of QCAT. And it would deal with issues such as disputes between operators and residents or tenants on contributions, maintenance reserves, termination of a contract, reselling of a unit, services, and standard of accommodation. Number 3.10 then outlines the dispute resolution tools that they use. On day 5, page 22, the committee, the delegation, visited the office of the Public Trustee of Queensland. It's an agency of the Queensland government, and the trustee office provides a number of services, which include will-making. This is a free service for all Australians. Enduring powers of attorney, deceased estate, applications for private executors, executors acting as administrator, acting as a trustee, etc. It is also self-funded through revenues it raised from fees it charges for the services. It also manages a number of foundations or trusts. In particular, advice services provided by the trust include the role of the administrator for adults with impaired capacity, being appointed also by QCAT. So there's a cross-referral among some of these bodies. It would then focus on personal injuries, assistance when being sued for debts owned or transactions, etc. It also has an investment service. And in 2009, the office was responsible for $1.17 billion of funds were managed by the service. Page 23, number 4, implications and lessons learned for South Africa. The first one is that the Ombuds service in Queensland is not managed or controlled by a board. However, it should be noted that the difference between the office in Australia and South Africa is that the Ombuds office falls directly under the Department of Justice as Attorney General, and it follows the reporting mechanism of being in a department. However, the South African bill proposes the establishment of an entity, public entity. The bill also proposes a funding model that includes, among others, levies collected from community schemes to fund the Ombuds service in South Africa. In the case of the Queensland office, the Commissioner's office, the services are funded by government fully. And since it is acknowledged that the sectional title industry would not be motivated to fund such a service. The Office of the Commissioner works from a central office in Australia with outreach programs for training, and they also undertake visits to outlying communities providing dispute resolution service. The Queensland experience, however, differs from South Africa in the sense that the jurisdiction of the Commissioner only relates to the Queensland state of Queensland, whereas the bill, South Africa's bill, proposes a national service with possible regional offices. In the case of Queensland, the office appoints part-time adjudicators, and the process followed is mostly a paper-based process for adjudication. And this possibly has cost-saving implications for South Africa to consider. While conciliation is a face-to-face process, conciliators may be appointed on either full-time or part-time basis. There's an organogram attached to this document, or there will be if it's not there already, that provides outline and the post in the office of the Commissioner in Queensland and how they are appointed. The conciliators also undertake regular visits to communities located further afield, as in the case of Queensland. During the visits to communities, conciliators may use local magistrate offices to conduct their business, which have also has cost-saving implications for them, and this may also reduce the need possibly for fully-fledged regional offices in the case of South Africa. The other important issue that emerged was generating revenue for sustainable human settlements. The Queensland government found a very innovative way to reduce disputes in the rental housing industry as it relates to bonds or deposits. The Rental Tenancy Authority, through the Rental Bond Service, not only reduced the number of disputes, but it created a useful way to generate funding for the rental housing sector. Instead of relying on government funding, the authority is therefore entirely self-funded and able to invest further in communities. This has important implications for the developing countries such as South Africa, faced by numerous challenges in the human settlement sector and with limited resources for affordable housing, which currently is almost exclusively funded by government. The introduction of a scheme such as the Rental Bond Service in South Africa could possibly ensure more resources to be invested in, in communities. It is likely that such a scheme would initially receive opposition, as was the case in Queensland, but in Queensland, citizens soon became used to the system. In South Africa, initiating a system similar to a rental bond service would require a review of relevant legislation, such as the Rental Housing Act and other relevant legislation. The other important lesson was the regulation of the rental sector. The experience of the Queensland Rental Authority highlighted the need to review current regulation of the South African rental housing sector, including dispute resolution mechanism. To date, despite enabling legislation passed by Parliament, two provinces have yet to implement rental tribunals for dispute resolution. Given the number of services provided to the rental housing sector by the Queensland Rental Authority, it calls for a review of current legislation such as the Rental Housing Act, as well as other mechanisms to ensure greater improvement of the rental housing market in South Africa. The other lesson related to the role of the NGO sector in human settlements. The NGO sector in Queensland plays a critical role in ensuring the development of sustainable and inclusive communities. Such an approach is commensurate with the philosophy of sustainable human settlements, instead of merely the provision of housing in South Africa. Important lessons for South Africa include the philosophy that existing knowledge and models should be used in an innovative and creative way to ensure that development and planning can maximize opportunities for communities to develop. The Warnery Institute's business model and approach to development serves as an important best practice for South Africa of what can be achieved to ensure that communities are integrated and sustainable. In essence, the use of the Maslow hierarchy of needs serves as an important reminder that sustainable human settlements should be more than basic shelter, an approach recognized by government. However, this approach has not yet been accepted by all developers. Strong partnerships between the Brisbane Housing Company and the Queensland Department of Communities to ensure that the availability of social housing is an important lesson. Queensland model suggests that social housing should not be the responsibility of only government, but that civil society can assist government. Further, the partnership model also indicates the need to explore the role of NGOs to possibly assist in the responsibility for rent collection and property management and maintenance in especially high-rise accommodation, as is the case of the Brisbane Housing Company. Surplus funds could be invested for further future expansion. In South Africa, the NGOs are not yet adequately developed to provide a service in line with the business model used by the Foresters Community Finance. Civil society organizations often experience difficulty in securing finance from mainstream financial markets. A critical aspect of the service offered by Foresters include investment in the asset base of civil society organizations. These assets may typically include buildings which may be used to deliver community services, possibly services to the homeless, residential properties which could be used to deliver affordable housing, equipment, etc. The introduction of such a model for NGOs in South Africa would assist NGOs in the social development sector, making them more sustainable. The lesson from the Brisbane Homelessness Service Centre advocates the concept of strong partnerships of all relevant stakeholders to ensure a holistic approach to address the plight of the homeless people. Partnerships include co-locating services, which are offered at the centre and visiting services, as well as the police to ensure that the centre is not targeted and homeless people, persons encountered, are referred to the centre. The final one is policy implications for a paradigm shift. The Queensland experience indicates that planning is a critical aspect towards ensuring sustainable human settlements. The Ordinary Institute emphasized that the promotion of sustainable outcomes calls for advanced planning, which may take up to 5 years. And planning should incorporate and include considerations such as who will be living in the community, what are their needs, their lifestyles, type of community engagement, land use considerations, etc. Another important lesson was that the Ordinary Institute highlighted the need for government to retain control over the planning, over the master plan, to ensure government's developmental objectives are met. It is critical that if government wants to achieve mixed land use and social integration of households, instead of the concentration of low-income households into a single suburb or community or even a building, developers may not be motivated to share government's objectives of achieving social justice and social integration. Therefore, government must ensure its ultimate control of the master plan instead of handing it over to developers. An important observation raised by the Brisbane Housing BHSC is that often government policy is the Brisbane Homelessness Service Centre is that often the government policy is to fund housing, but it does not fund the support services that people may require once they are settled into their own accommodations. Particularly as it relates to persons with a disability, there is therefore a need to further explore this concept, and possibly partnerships may require within the South African context of sustainable human settlements. Finally, South Africa is faced with numerous development challenges, including a 2.1 million housing backlog. These challenges are compounded by the finite resources to government's disposal. The Queensland Government developed innovative solutions to address some of the same challenges, including establishing a rental bond service, which is able to generate considerable revenue to fund services in the human settlement sector. Recommendations. The delegation therefore recommends that a future summit on sustainable human settlements be held to discuss how South Africa can learn from international best practice and possible future changes in policy direction. The Portfolio Committee on Human Settlements to share best practices gained from the Australian experience, for example. The WIPRI on how the constituency office is managed in Woodridge. Portfolio committees on justice and constitutional development on the dispute resolution mechanisms, including QCAT, and the trade and industry portfolio committee on the office of the public trustee, as well as the portfolio committee on social development. That the portfolio committee on human settlements incorporates lessons learned from the experience in Queensland, Australia, when it processes legislation and other related matters. Number six, okay. Conclusion. Lessons learned during the delegation study tour to Queensland, Australia suggest a number of best practices that have possible implications for South Africa. While some of these issues it's possible to make changes in the way we conduct our business in the country, the rest requires further discussion on future policy direction for a shift in paradigm. In the words of the 2008 State of the Nation address, it calls for business unusual. End acknowledgement. The delegation would like to express its appreciation to the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. I think it's DIRCO. The Minister of Human Settlements for availing two legal advisors from the department to share the new knowledge gained for the study tour, as well as the South African Embassy in Australia. Sorry, the main one, number one, is Parliament. The first one will be Parliament, and then at the end it will be, say, a report to be considered and adopted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Karen. I think the other issue on the recommendations is the unleashing of the NGO sector, because seemingly you know that the South African government it promotes
the NGO sector to be part of EE development, but it's just a recommendation to say to encourage, to promote, to encourage the unleashing of NGO sector, but not in the human sector, not in the human settlement sector per se, because in Australia it is they are operating in a broad spectrum, whilst in the South African situation we are utilizing the housing institutions. So it does not mean that we are going to change from what we are doing, but I think it is proper that we facilitate more, especially on the issue of cooperatives. We have to encourage that. So that was the report to the portfolio committee, and I think the we have also noted that there's quite a lot of issues that have been covered. And I think one of the issues is this issue of the trustees. There was a misrepresentation because we referred to the trustees in the BC cooperative, I mean in the body corporate. But I'm sure there was a misunderstanding on that side. But I think we gained a lot, because that is also very much important for us as the policy makers. And we understand that when the delegations visited any country, or even on the issue of a normal oversight, we just collect all the information that is relevant as the policy makers. So I think that is the report, but now I'm going to give to the members to ask some questions of clarity, but not going to adopt the report. It's just a tabling of the report, and then we can ask the questions, and then the members, the delegation is going to respond, even all of us, even Rosuman Kibu Advocate Light is going to make a contribution. So we're going to follow that. But I think on page one, there's nothing much. I don't know if there's, okay. On page one, there's nothing much. And even on page two, we are aware that why we went there. So I think the issue on page three, we can start on page three. So, Honorable Stein.
Chair, thank you very much. I think, first of all, I'm going to make a I'm not going to ask questions per page. I'm going to make a very general comment. First of all, I think the committee was very fortunate in that they were exposed to quite a large aspect, and not very specifically just the sectional title, which is good, because it proves that the visit was much more fruitful than if it was aimed solely at the Sectional Titles Act and the Ombudsman Services Book. And there is definitely a lot of things that we can take on board that we need to unpack, and I think we should, with the help of the researchers, it should be isolated, ring-fenced, and we should look at them relative to our situation and what we can do to change and improve the situation. And yes, I do agree, I did actually make a note that social development should be included as well. Also, I think the report is for somebody that hasn't been part of it, it tells me a lot, so I want to thank the researchers in particular and the people that were responsible for it. The only criticism or comment that I have, Chairperson, is that I'd like to see a little bit more in the recommendations, specifically to the details that we've got, whether the delegation has learned something that we should either incorporate in our bill, or whether there's something that we should change, or whether there's in fact something that will work where it doesn't work in Australia. So that really is my only criticism in terms of the recommendation. Something very specifically related to the two bills that we may have learned there that may influence or change what we currently have, etc. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Stein. Honourable Mashish.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I also happy about the report, and then
I wish I was also there in Australia.
You can go tomorrow.
All right, thank you very much. And then I'm also supporting what Honorable Steen has just said about the recommendation from our side in South Africa. And then I just want to ask just a small question, because this document is huge. I forgot other questions that I wanted to ask. I just want to know about on page 5, where you talk about the accommodation for youth and then accommodation for senior persons who meet eligible criteria. Maybe I should just get the little bit of criteria for the senior persons. But all in all, the report is so wonderful. Thank you, Chairperson.
Can we get a response? Delegation?
For the senior people, it is based on income only, whereas for the youth, you have to be employed or study, but it's people who need it, who are senior people, who have an income, the criteria for in terms of your income. Can you afford housing in the private market? If not, you qualify for the social housing. But thank you for that. We'll add that then as an explanation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think we really appreciate the comments by the portfolio committee members, and I think we have to work on that, because there's quite a lot that we can do about it. So I think by we can't do it today. The program is too tight this week. We can look at it next week. I mean, the office is going to work, but as the committee, the delegation, I think we'll see when to meet, and then the committee will be advised. Mr. Fay?
May I just ask one question that may cover some of the work we're doing in the Sectional Titles Act? On page 8, under Managing Bodies Corporate, there's mention of the Administrative Fund and the Sinking Fund. What I'd like to know is, and the very first sentence of the second paragraph says the body corporate budget should cover. Is this in fact under regulation in Australia? Is it must they cover, or is it an option really? Because I mean, we're looking at the managing of sectional title, and it's something depending upon what they do that we could take into consideration. So I'm not sure if it's regulation that it must be covered, or if it's an optional thing. The way you say it should, it's almost you leaving it up to them.
No, it is regulated. They must. That should. I'm sure that should. Yes. So I think there's quite a lot. Even for instance, the issue of the management agencies. You remember that we had a question about them. We also had a question on the tenants' participation, because in the trustees they have to be part of that. And then we also have some questions on. It's not much, but with the advisory council, we had a structure there. So I think we need to, something that there's quite a lot that we can make recommendations. It was just a offsite from the side of us. So we can do that and then present them to the portfolio committee. We can do it, I suggest it.
Thank you, Chair. Still on that issue and a matter, I think it's also critically important for the committee to note that given the fact that our draft, you know, it's originally based on that particular model, we have borrowed that particular model directly from that country into our country. So some of the other aspects, like Honorable Chair indicated, we have confirmed, you know, they're making in terms of our bill. Because that bill is, our bill currently is based on that particular model. We have borrowed that particular model from that particular country. So, of course, there will be some other few issues that, of course, we'll have to really look at in terms of the practical experience. But however, the bulk of the issues were more into practical matters that we have seen to say that how do they work and all those other processes. But we'll of course again indicate and add some of the other lessons that we've learned. But the critical matter was that our model as a draft was indicated to the committee and parliament before to say that it's borrowed from the particular country. Thank you, sir.
Honorable comment?
Thank you, Chairperson. Obviously, we were very privileged, those of us that did go, to be there. And I think along the lines of the conciliation and the adjudication, you know, there's a lot more that is coming out there. But I think overall, what struck one very forcibly, and with us going into new area now, will be also something for us to be looking at, and that is the training and the education and the support systems that go into no matter which organisations we were visiting. And I think that's going to be something that we will pick up on and learn from as well when we're implementing our two new bills. So it was a very good experience. The efficiencies with which they work, and also the small numbers. None of these organisations that we went into had bloated personnel. They were all working on lean, mean sort of operations, and researchers that were needed, for example, to cut down on expense there. They would go to the universities and to the magistrates, researchers, and use that facility. So there's a lot of things that have, you know, that will come out when you've had a chance also to look properly at the report. And obviously there's a lot of detail that we can't put into this report, otherwise we'll end up with something absolutely huge. But I think it certainly was a very worthwhile opportunity that we had, and there will be a lot coming out for us to be able to use. I think just in the conciliation and adjudication, for example, huge numbers of people coming in and the conciliatory process being applied, and then only a small number of that actually going to adjudication. So, you know, it shows just how well skilled they are there in dealing with all of this. And there's a lot that we could say, but I know that we've pushed for time.
Okay.
Tomorrow we were supposed to look at our bill. I don't know. We will work together with the whip and then we'll see. We'll communicate what is going to happen tomorrow, because now we still have to, this report has to be adopted first. I'm not sure, but I'm subject for correction. This report has to be adopted, and the report has not yet been adopted because we still have to amend, put some information in. Otherwise, if it was not the case, we were going to adopt the report. I don't know, but I need guidance from the members. And then it means we can shift for Thursday. Thursday we meet. Do we meet on Thursday? So we can shift tomorrow for the other week. We'll see in terms of the program. We can even take the whole day next week. Hmm?
Okay.
Just clarity in terms of the program. We're not meeting on Thursday, but we're meeting Friday morning. If we now not meeting tomorrow, would we still be meeting Friday morning?
No, Friday morning is a visit to. No. Lucky Western Cape. To Western Cape, yeah, it's Western Cape, okay. It's a visit to Western Cape on Friday. But now, that is why I'm saying we are going to work on the program with the whip, with the whip, and then we'll communicate what I'm going to do tomorrow. Because we have to look at the bill tomorrow and try to incorporate some of the recommendations in terms of the program. Where's your program? What is
that?
Okay, there's the program. Okay, tomorrow is the 19th. It's deliberations on sectional title, schemes management bill in the community. Yes. Okay, no, we still meet tomorrow. No, we still meet tomorrow. Because if we remember, we had an A-list. Now, we requested that the Parliament should make sure that they provide the committee with a B-list to ensure that those issues that were on A-list are accommodated in the B-list. Then, as we continue next week, we'll make sure that we incorporate the recommendations or the other issues we'll discuss when we are considering the bill. We'll consider incorporation of the issues from the report. So it means we still meet tomorrow. Is that
it? I want to make a recommendation because I think the rest of our program in terms of the bill depend on some of the recommendations that must come out here. I want to recommend that the delegation perhaps meet tomorrow morning. The rest of the committee can maybe start a little bit later. But that the delegation meet, finalize the recommendations. If we accept them, we can accept the report because that's all that needs to be added, which then prepares us to carry on whenever you wish with the actual bills.
Okay. So the suggestion is that tomorrow morning, the delegation meets. We agree on that one. So the committee will not meet because in the afternoon there are other programs, parliamentary programs. That is why we are meeting in the morning. So other members are released for tomorrow. I'm sure we are agreeing on that one. Then, on the 25th Tuesday, next week, we meet now. I think we can do what we're supposed to be doing now, tomorrow. So we'll see. We can request Parliament. I will see. I will speak to the Office of the Chair of Chairs for the 25th so that we can try and get more time to deal with these matters, which is Tuesday 25th. And then, Mr. Stein, I know what he's going to request, is that on Thursday, we consider the visit to Western Cape.
I wanted to request that we actually then meet as a committee on Thursday to adopt your recommendations and the report.
Oh,
which
okay.
Means next week we can then continue with the bill.
No, I think that we can apply in the afternoon because in the morning session, mostly there are caucuses. It might happen that there are caucuses. But if there are no caucuses, as I'm saying, we are going to communicate with the Office of the Chief Whip and also with the Office of the... But if there are caucuses in the morning, we can request the afternoon session. So that is why I'm saying we are going to communicate.
Your information, we don't have a
caucus. The ruling party can have a caucus.
No, there's nothing that you can say.
No, no, we will, definitely, Mr. Singh.
Maybe that's why you're
having a problem. No, sure. I want just to raise the point that maybe we shouldn't really delay it if there's no substantive issue that we pick up from the floor. Given the fact, anyway, that we borrow some of the matters from Australia. The reason why committee went to Australia also was for itself, to interact with people who apply already what we have borrowed from them. The areas that will be similar, will be areas that will be not similar, will be areas that will be applicable in our context, or areas that will not do that. I thought in our last meeting we said that the research team then they will pick up those matters for us to answer whether there are issues that they think that are very critical, because you can see there is areas generally that they can be applicable, but there are areas that are not applicable at all. And then given the state of organization. And then I think that's what we really wanted to do, because my view is that we must not delay adopting a report if there are no substantive issues that are not covered by the report. And then because then the team, then particularly the researchers and the crazy team, they will then identify one or two areas. But I think there will be one or two areas. There are not many issues that we can add in existing things. And then, to me, if we can just do that, then to ensure that we don't delay enough meetings unnecessarily. And of course, Thursday, I know that Thursday is sometimes a very difficult chair because the other meetings organized by the student party too. And then they may affect some of the members who are here. And then I got no problem really for us if there are issues that we have identified. And then we can then work it out in a manner that assists us to move. My expectation, the chair, was that today we would try to do two things. First is for us to present this report and deliberate on the report as we have indicated, and then the team as a whole and identify whether there are areas in the report that could assist us to enrich our experiences in terms of our own views. And then if there's nothing like that again, I think there's no harm to ensure that we don't do it. But I think the researchers and the team really, I know that they have done a good job. And then just to identify some of the areas of the members, the federal requested, to identify some of the areas for the purpose of this meeting. Because it would be therefore easy to put them in and say, these are five areas that we think are very important to be added in our existing field in order for us really to use the experience that we have, I think we have gained from the Australian situation. And then I thought we discussed this matter that, of course, what is applicable in Australia can never be applicable to us, because the circumstances will differ. Therefore, I thought that's what we really wanted to do. And I guess that we should pursue that way of approaching it. If that issue that Mr. Stain, he thinks generally, because I think he has been dealing with this matter for many years, if that issue that he thinks in this meeting, because it's a formal meeting of a committee, that I think, in my view, we shouldn't table a report and the committee doesn't address the report without us knowing what are the critical issues that are not there on the report. If there are issues that are identified, it may happen that the Honorable Stain also has done some good research and some of these methods that I think has been in the water in Australia and that he will understand what he wants us to do on this matter. And then I guess then we should do that. But I don't think we should not adopt the report that is presented in the meeting for no apparent substantive matter that is outstanding. I think we should.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson, I want to partly agree with both of these previous speakers and to suggest, and I think this is what I first heard Honourable Stain say, we are very familiar with the report. There are no major things that need to be changed. So I don't see any reason why tomorrow morning we as the delegation can't meet and just add now, which is very important. And if it depends also on the researcher in the department, the secretary, whether they can work before tomorrow morning to get us the document. But for us then to meet as a delegation and then to say that by 10:30 we then meet as a full meeting and adopt the report, you know, as fully presented. But there are no substantive issues that we've got to sort out. It's really smaller things. I think it's a very good report. And I think we can do both tomorrow morning.
Okay. No, now it's fine. I don't want your response, Minister. We agree that tomorrow morning the delegation will meet at 10 and work on these issues. In fact, they should have been worked by the
by the administration, but we'll confirm them as the committee. But I mean, as the delegation. But after that, the committee can meet because we can finalize that thing before 1 o'clock. So we agree on that. Final. Thank you.
No, no, sir. My view, sir. I got no problem for us meeting tomorrow. We may not be there because of the doctor meeting that is convened by the chief office tomorrow. And then we may not be around ourselves. It shouldn't affect the focus in a manner, the quorum in a manner that even tomorrow become a very difficult exercise. Because some of your members will be not there because of the problem of the ruling party. But my proposal, Chair, that there's no harm to adopt your report. Once we've adopted the report, then we can work out on the report and identify critical areas that we want to add. Because therefore, your staff won't have a problem. Because the report would have been adopted by the meeting to use the experience then to work out on this matter. Yeah. Tomorrow then we can then rework on some of the issues. I think that's what I really want us to do.
Okay. I don't think there is a problem in adopting the report if there are no substantive issues. But adopting the report with additional information that it relates to what Mr. Stein was mentioning. So we will request the colleagues to get a couple of members next to our agenda now for 5 minutes to get members to assist us in that. Because we're not adopting this. How many are we? 2, 4, 5, 6. At least we can get 2 or 3.
Look, once I accept what Richard said, I don't see the difference between adopting or getting members now to adopt the report or doing it tomorrow afternoon after the recommendations have been added. It's really one and the same thing. And I believe that they're very specific recommendations, whatever they may be. I'm not saying we should put recommendations in where we say we accept everything that they do their side. I'm by no means saying that. But the whole purpose of the visit was to go and see what they do in terms of this.
There are members living here around. We are in a parliament complex here. Why can't you request, not necessarily the members of parliament?
All I'm saying, Chair, is we obviously want to adopt a report that gives the recommendations of what the purpose of the visit was to go and learn and put forward recommendations to the committee. The report I have no problem with. I will fully support it. I'm saying there are aren't very specific recommendations related to the bill. There's about all the other issues and talking to other departments, which is all good and well. But the whole purpose of the visit was to find whether we're going to do something they do or not, and I think that should be reflected in the final report. That's all I'm saying.
I think, now, let me be fair.
But, Chair, I'm not very married to my proposal. It's just my main worry is that we may not be around many of us. Then you'll have much more problems to get members to do this work, because there are other standing meetings and a country that we may not be able to do. My view anyway, General, that you adopt a report and work on that report. And then whatever area that Mr. Stein is raising, because it may happen that many of us who went there, we have understood exactly that what the bill is doing is covering a lot of issues that we think are critical. Therefore, there will be no need for us to make any other recommendation. And then if there are issues that have been identified by, because really the reason why ourselves went there, when we met here, the delegation also raised this matter. What are the substantive issues that you want to put on the existing bill? And then we raised an issue here that if there are issues, identify them and put them in. I just suspect that the reason why we are not having a specific recommendation for including in a bill, except the experiences, therefore means that we accept the report as we present it ourselves And then what we'll do then, if there are areas for members who are not there, they may identify areas that they think they should put there. And then actually, I think we can do two things, Chair. We can allow the meeting tomorrow morning to meet. And then I'm not sure exactly what is the training started, what time was the doctor meeting. Convene that start tomorrow. And then we'll see then what we can do just to split ourselves, maybe to come this side for quorum purposes. And then ensure that the meeting.
I think for me, it's not an issue, the recommendations per se, that are relating to the bill. It's not an issue per se, because those recommendations are going to be made by the committee based on the report.
Yeah.
When the report now is being debated to Parliament, I'm not sure. But if the members feel that the committee has to select some issues, no, it's not an issue. We can do that. But really, there's quite a lot of problems. For instance, even today, there's a meeting at 2. There's a meeting at 12. There's a meeting at 2 for the chairpersons. There's a workshop for the chairpersons for the whole week up to Friday. So let's hope that at least tomorrow we'll finalize this before 1 o'clock. Let's agree on that. After 1, I won't be available up to Friday.
I just want to suggest at the time, can't we meet at 9 o'clock?
Okay, fine.
And then it's earlier, then we can.
And then the committee, half past 10. No, half past 10. Committee. Half past 10, committee, half past 10. At 9. Thank you.
Please remind us about
it. Thank you.